I'm back live on the show after the holidays, and I'm excited to present on today's show an in-depth look at the latest Democratic debate with my guest David Dayan, who'll be joining us shortly. Plus, Porter Ranch resident Matthew Pacuco will join us live in studio along with Alexandra Nagy of Food and Water Watch to explain the extent of the Aliso Canyon methane leak and the dangers that it presents to Californians. And filmmaker Renee Tajima Pena will discuss her new and powerful documentary No Mas Bebes. Just 15 days before the Iowa caucus, Senator Bernie Sanders, former State Secretary Hillary Clinton, and former Maryland Governor Martin O'Malley faced off in a Democratic Party debate in Charleston, South Carolina. That debate was sponsored by NBC and YouTube and took place just a few blocks from Mother Emanuel AME Church, where a horrific mass shooting took place last year. Media pundits were split on who won the debate, Clinton or Sanders. The most important issues that emerged during the debate were gun control, healthcare, the economy, campaign finance, and on the foreign policy front, the war on ISIS. It also the issues of gun control. David Dayan is my guest. He is a contributing writer to Salon and a weekly columnist at the Fiscal Times and a contributor to The Intercept. Welcome to Uprising, David.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much for joining us. Well, overall, do you have a take on who won the debate?
Well, win or lose, I think, is a weird kind of metric to put on a political debate. I don't know. I guess, you know, it gave voters a good sense of what each candidate's strengths are and what their policy ideas are, and I think you know, that's certainly worthwhile to people in making their decision.
Now, the first issue that came up was gun control, which has emerged as Bernie Sanders' weak point on domestic issues. That problem has been front and center in recent months, with Obama recently signing executive actions on gun control. And this is Sanders. I want to play a clip of him speaking at the debate on the defensive, Sanders being on the defensive from Clinton.
This should not be a political issue. What we should be doing is working together. And by the way, as a senator from a rural state that has virtually no gun control, I believe that I am in an excellent position to bring people together
to fight for sensible gun safety legislation. But you didn't answer the question that you did change your position on immunity for gun manufacturers.
What I have said is that the gun manufacturers' liability bill had some good provisions. Among other things, we prohibited ammunition that would have killed cops who had protection on. We had child safety protection for guns in that legislation. And what we also said is a small mom and pop gun shop who sells a gun legally to somebody should not be held liable if somebody does something terrible with that gun. So what I said is I would relook at it. We are going to relook at it, and I will support stronger provisions.
Secretary Clinton.
David Dayan, is this a weak point for Bernie Sanders, particularly given that his liberal and progressive supporters have strong feelings on gun control?
Yeah, I think it is a point that certainly the Clinton campaign is making a point of emphasis. Obviously, with what we've seen with the terrible gun violence over the last couple of years, this has become an intense issue on the left, and Sanders was a little slow to understand that and realize that this would be a weak spot. I think that it's been a little overblown, as Sanders is fond of pointing out. He has a B-plus rating from the NRA. He is not exactly in step with the ideology of, say, most Republicans, which is to have no gun control whatsoever. But because there's, you know, this opening, the Clinton campaign has certainly made it a major point of emphasis.
Let's play another excerpt from the Democratic debate over the weekend. Early in the debate, the issue of Black Lives Matter made it in. Here is debate co-host Lester Holt addressing Governor Martin O'Malley about it.
Google searches for the words Black Lives Matter surpassed civil rights movement last year. And here in South Carolina, Black Lives Matter was the number one trending political issue. Governor O'Malley. You've campaigned on your record as governor of Maryland and before that the mayor of Baltimore. Last year, of course, Baltimore was rocked by violent unrest in the wake of the death of Freddie Gray. And right from the start of your campaign, you've been dogged by those who blame your tough-on-crime, so-called zero-tolerance policies as mayor for contributing to that unrest. What responsibility do you bear?
Yeah, let's talk about this. When I ran for mayor in 1999, Lester, it was not because our city was doing well. It was because we were burying over 300 young, poor black men every single year. And that's why I ran, because, yes, black lives matter.
Now, do you think, David, that the issue of racism and criminal justice has been so successfully raised, at least in the media, by Black Lives Matter, that it's quite unsurprising that it gets into the Democratic debate? And also, people have pointed out that the debate focused on criminal justice far more than any of the GOP debates have.
Oh, that's absolutely true. I was at a forum back in June of last year with O'Malley and Bernie Sanders, where the Black Lives Matter protesters disrupted the forum and tried to force their agenda into the conversation. That has been wildly successful. You have not seen this level of engagement in the Democratic Party with these issues at all. In fact, the Democratic Party bears quite a bit of responsibility for the rise of mass incarceration whether you're talking about the Clinton crime bill or any number of factors that, there's definitely been within the Democratic Party and a tendency toward over-policing, tough on crime, those kinds of things. This movement has really changed the game and changed the conversation within the party in a way that you have to tip your hat to these activists and protesters who've done a really great job of getting their ideas on the agenda.
The issue of health care, one would have imagined, wouldn't have really been on the radar aside from criticism of the Affordable Care Act. But Bernie Sanders has been pushing a single payer for all agenda. And during the debate over the weekend, Clinton challenged Sanders about his Medicare for All proposal. She claimed it would undo all of the work that Obama did for the Affordable Care Act and plunge the country into another, quote, contentious debate. Here is Sanders making his case and Clinton responding.
My proposal, provide health care to all people, get private insurance out of health insurance, lower the cost of health care for middle-class families by $5,000. That's the vision we need to take.
I have to say I'm not sure whether we're talking about the plan you just introduced tonight or we're talking about the plan you introduced nine times in the Congress, but the fact is we have the Affordable Care Act. That is one of the greatest accomplishments of President Obama, of the Democratic Party, and of our country. And we have already seen 19 million Americans get insurance. We have seen the end of pre-existing conditions keeping people from getting insurance. We have seen women no longer paying more for our insurance than men. And we have seen young people up to the age of 26 being able to stay on their parents' policy. There are things we can do to improve it, but to tear it up and start over again, pushing our country back into that kind of a contentious debate, I think is the wrong direction.
Now, David Dayen, the list of accomplishments she listed of the Affordable Care Act definitely sound quite impressive, but she is coming under fire. Clinton is coming under fire for claiming that the Medicare for All proposal of Sanders would end up costing Americans more. What do you make of it?
Yeah, it wouldn't cost Americans more. I mean, I think Sanders put out a statement about that shows that if single payer does anything, it saves money because you reduce administrative expenses and you create one large risk pool rather than having all these different insurers that are bargaining with hospitals. You have one payer who is setting a price in terms of the negotiations with the healthcare providers. So national health spending would come down. And that can't help but have an impact on people who don't have to pay premiums anymore, according to Sanders, don't have to pay copays, things like that. What this debate shows, it's really writ large the divide within the Democratic Party about incrementalism and moving forward slowly and taking what you can get out of the political system and proposing big ideas and then trying to get the country on your side for those ideas. That's really an interesting debate within the party. And the question is, you know, where do you begin and where do you end? And it's something that really has animated this entire debate, this entire primary season, which nobody really expected. I mean, I think the expectation was that Clinton would sort of be coronated and that Sanders would have an opportunity to present his ideas and maybe push Clinton to the left a little bit. What's really gone on is that we've had a big debate within the Democratic Party about whether you go big or go small. Hmm. And I think it's healthy.
And the other aspect of this debate was that it almost appeared to be sort of a popularity contest for Obama. Clinton continually aligning herself with Obama and Sanders, while being respectful to Obama, calling for a political revolution. So Clinton representing continuity, Sanders representing revolution. Does that about sum it up?
Change, yeah. Hmm. Yeah, I think continuity versus change. You have to understand that in South Carolina, which is where the debate was held, Barack Obama has a 90% approval rating. Hmm. So it is not surprising that the candidates would want to wrap themselves in Obama, use Obama as a shield, and try to draft off that popularity. But continuity versus change is definitely the tenor of where this primary has gone. And you know, in 2008, change won out over yeah. continuity, right? So I think a lot of the interest in Sanders is really a residual effect of the extreme interest in 2008 with Obama.
Let's also now take a look at what was said during the debate on an issue very dear to Sanders' heart, and that is Wall Street and the power of big mm-hmm. banks. Here is Sanders responding to Clinton, where he accused her of taking speaking fees from Goldman Sachs.
But here is the issue. Secretary touched on it. Can you really reform Wall Street when they are spending millions and millions of dollars on campaign contributions and when they are providing speaker fees to individuals? So it's easy to say, well, I'm going to do this and do that. But I have doubts when people receive huge amounts of money from Wall Street. I am very proud. I do not have a super PAC. I do not want Wall Street's money. I'll rely on the middle class and working families for my campaign contributions.
I have a question for you.
David Dan, is that one of Sanders' biggest Trump cards that he can turn to Clinton and say, I don't have a super PAC. I don't want a super PAC. My money is coming entirely from small donations.
Yeah, I think he's trying to make the argument that he's not beholden to special interests. And with respect to Wall Street, that's very important because, you know, unlike the Affordable Care Act has a system set up, and if you wanted to go to a single-payer system, you'd have to pass new legislation. In the Dodd-Frank Act, there actually is a set of policies and ideas that the regulators could use to break up the big banks. That's in Title I of Dodd-Frank. If certain requirements on the banks are seen as inadequate, or even if they represent a quote-unquote grave threat to the financial stability of the United States, then the regulators can get together and actually break these banks up. And so in that case, political will is really of salient importance. And what Sanders is saying is that if I'm not beholden to special interests on Wall Street, I can nominate people who will be put in the position where if it's in their judgment that these banks are too big and too well-connected and too unmanageable, then they can be dismantled. Hmm. And so it really becomes important because Dodd-Frank does actually give you the tools, although they're not being used right now.
Finally, let's take a look at foreign policy, particularly Syria and ISIS, which made it into the debate. Clinton and Sanders seem a lot closer to one another, and foreign policy does seem to be another one of Sanders' weak points. He has neither the experience nor the progressive approach. Clinton has the experience, but not progressive values. Here is Clinton speaking at the debate, followed by Sanders.
I'm very committed to both going after ISIS, but also supporting what Secretary Kerry is doing to try to move on a political, diplomatic course to try to begin to slow down and hopefully end the carnage in Syria, which is the root of so many of the problems that we see in the region and beyond.
Senator Sanders, ground this forces, is, yes or no?
As everybody here knows, this is an incredibly complicated and difficult issue, and I applaud. I know President Obama's been getting a lot of criticism on this. I think he is doing the right thing. What the nightmare is, which many of my Republican colleagues appear to want, is to not have learned the lesson of Iraq, to get American young men and women involved in perpetual warfare in the quagmire of Syria and the Middle East would be an unmitigated disaster that, as president, I will do everything in my power to avoid.
Andrea, 30.
We should learn from King Abdullah of Jordan, one of the few heroes in a very unheroic place. And what Abdullah said is this is a war for the soul of Islam, and that Muslim troops should be on the ground with our support and the support of other major countries. That is how we destroy ISIS, not with American troops in perpetual warfare.
David, Dan, 19,000 Iraqi civilians were found to have been killed in a 14-month period between January 2014 and October 2015, according to a report just released today by the UN, underscoring what Sanders was saying. However, as is often the case, most of the Democratic candidates tend to be on the same page in terms of wanting to use soft power, so-called soft power, internationally, while the Republicans are interested in using hard power. Not much more difference than that between the two parties. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true. You know, I mean, I think what you saw there is Sanders trying to bear hug Obama, much like Clinton did in the domestic portion of the debate. I think the constant shout-outs to King Abdullah, monarch, and it has been too good to political dissenters and people who want political reform in his country and in the region. Is puzzling to me. I think Sanders represents a certain, I think it's a pretty narrow range between Sanders and Clinton that they represent in terms of a foreign policy vision. It's, less, as you said, less, progressive and more along a continuum. I think that the theory is that Clinton would be a little more willing to use military power and project military power abroad. But, at the same time, I think the continuity with Obama would be fairly clear if Sanders were to come.
Well, David, always a pleasure to have you on. Thanks so much for joining us today.
All right, thanks.
David Dayan is a contributing writer to Salon and a weekly columnist at the Fiscal Times, also a contributor to The Intercept. This is Uprising. When we come back, we'll take a look at the Porter Ranch gas leak. Stay tuned.